The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back. Lord knows they'll try to silence our voices. They'll pretend to be patriots fighting for fairness for all. But they're not even fit to hold office. What they believe doesn't fit with freedom at all. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, and ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
All right, we're back. Second hour of the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stadtmiller, on this Tuesday, 20 August 2019. We're covering the story at the heart of the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. This story was written literally a couple of days before Mr. Epstein was suicided. And we'll pick up talking about promise. Whereas Mossad's past reliance on gathering intelligence had relied on the same tactics used by the equivalents in the U.S. and elsewhere, the widespread adoption of the promise software, largely through the actions of Earl Bryan and Robert Maxwell, gave the Mossad a way to gather not just troves of counterintelligence data, but also blackmail on other intelligence agencies and powerful figures. Indeed, promises, backdoor, and adoption by the intelligence agencies all over the world essentially provided the Mossad with access to troves of blackmail that the CIA and the FBI had acquired on their friends and foes for over a half a century. Strangely, in recent years, the FBI has sought to hide information related to Robert Maxwell's connection to the Promise scandal. According to journalist Robert Fisk, Maxwell, also involved in the Mossad abduction of Israeli nuclear weapons whistleblower Venunu Mordecai, Mordecai had attempted to provide the media with information on the extent of Israel's nuclear weapons program, which was eventually published by the Sunday Times of London. Yet Mordecai had also contacted the Daily Mirror with the information, the Mirror being an outlet that was owned by Maxwell, and whose foreign editor was a close Maxwell associate and alleged Mossad asset, Nicholas Davies. Journalist Seymour Hersh alleged that Davies had also been involved in his Israeli arms deals. Per Fisk, it was Maxwell who contacted the Israeli embassy in London and told them of Mordecai's activities. This led to Mordecai's entrapment by a female Mossad agent who seduced him as part of a honey trap. That operation that led to his kidnapping and later imprisonment in Israel, Mordecai served 18-year sentence, 12 of which were in solitary confinement. Then there was the issue of Maxwell's death. Why widely cited by mainstream and independent media alike as suspicious and potential homicide. According to authors Gordon Thomas and Martin Dillon, Maxwell had sealed his own fate when he attempted to threaten top Mossad officials with the exposure of certain operations if they did not help him rescue his media empire from crippling debt and financial difficulties. Many of Maxwell's creditors, who had grown increasingly displeased with the media mogul, were Israeli, and several of them were alleged to be Mossad-connected themselves. Thomas and Dillon argue in their biography of Maxwell's life that the Mossad felt that Maxwell had become more of a liability than an asset and killed him on his yacht 3 months after he demanded the bailout. On the other extreme are theories that suggest Maxwell committed suicide because of his financial difficulties his empire faced. Some have taken Maxwell's funeral held in Israel as the country's official confirmation of Maxwell's service to the Mossad, as it was likened to a state funeral attended by no less than six serving and former heads of Israeli intelligence. During his funeral service in Jerusalem, Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir eulogized him and stated, "He has done more for Israel than can be today be said." Other eulogies were given by future Prime Ministers Ehud Olmert, then the Health Minister, and Shimon Peres, with the latter also praising Maxwell's services on behalf of Israel. Swimming in the same swamp. As he built his business empire and even became a member of parliament, Maxwell was also doing work for Israeli intelligence, as several of the Israeli companies in which he invested became fronts for the Mossad. In addition, as he became a media mogul, he developed a bitter rivalry with Rupert Murdoch, a close friend of Roy Cohn and an influential figure in American and British media. Maxwell also partnered with the Bronfman brothers, Edgar and Charles, key figures in the mega group. In 1989, Maxwell and Charles Bronfman partnered up to bid on the Jerusalem Post newspaper, and the Post described the two men as two of the world's leading Jewish financiers, and their interest in the venture as developing the Jerusalem Post and expanding its influence among world Jewry. A year prior, Maxwell and Bronfman had become top shareholders in the Israeli pharmaceutical company Teva. Maxwell also worked with Charles Bronfman's brother Edgar in the late 1980s to convince the Soviet Union to allow Soviet Jews to immigrate to Israel. Edgar's efforts in this regard have received more attention, as it was a defining moment of his decades-long presidency of the World Jewish Congress, of which Ronald Lauder is currently president. Yet Maxwell had also made considerable use of his contacts in the Soviet government in this effort. Maxwell also moved in the circles of the network previously described. In this series, a key example of this May 1989 party Maxwell hosted on his yacht, the Lady Ghislaine, named for his youngest daughter and Epstein's future girlfriend. Attendees of the party included Roy Cohn's protege, Donald Trump, and his longtime law partner, Tom Bolin. A close friend of Nancy Reagan was also present, journalist Mike Wallace, as was literary agent Mort Jenklow, who represented Ronald Reagan and two of Cohen's closest friends, journalist William Sapphire and Barbara Walters. The CEO of what would soon become Time Warner, Steve Ross, was also invited to the exclusive event. Ross's presence is notable as he had built his business empire largely through his association with New York crime lords Manny Kimmel and Abner Longy Zwillman. Zwillman was a close friend of Meyer Lansky's. Michael Steinhardt's father, and Sam Bronfman, father of Edgar and Charles Bronfman. Another attendee of Maxwell's yacht party was former Secretary of the Navy and former Henry Kissinger staffer John Lehman, who would go on to associate with the controversial neoconservative think tank Project for a New American Century. Prior to being Secretary of the Navy, Lehman had been president of the Abingdon Corporation, which hired arch neocon Richard Perle to manage the portfolio of Israel's arms dealer Shlomo Zabludowicz and his son Chaim, who paid Abingdon $10,000 a month. A scandal arose when those payments continued after both Lehman and Perle joined the Reagan Department of Defense, and while Perle was working to persuade the Pentagon to buy arms from companies linked to Zabludowicz, Perle had been part of the Reagan transition team along with Roy Cohn's longtime friend and law partner Tom Bolin. In addition to Lehman, another former Kissinger staffer, Thomas Pickering, was present at Maxwell's yacht. Pickering played a minor role in the Iran-Contra affair, and at the time of Maxwell's yacht party, he was U.S. ambassador to Israel. Senator John Tower, Republican out of Texas, who allegedly conspired with Maxwell in the Mossad-bugged Promise software at the Los Alamos laboratories, was also present. Tower died just months before Maxwell in a suspicious plane crash. Ghislaine Maxwell, who was also at this rather notable event, after her father's mysterious death and alleged murder of the same yacht that bears her name in 1991, she quickly packed her bags and moved to New York City. There, she soon made the acquaintance of Jeffrey Epstein, and a few years later developed close ties to the Clinton family. Jeffrey Epstein and the New Promise. After it was revealed that Epstein had evaded stricter sentencing in 2008 due to his links to intelligence, it was the Mossad ties of Ghislaine Maxwell's father that have led many to speculate that Epstein's sexual blackmail operation was sharing incriminating information with the Mossad. Former CBS executive producer and current journalist for the media outlet Narrative, Sev Shalev, has since claimed that he independently confirmed that Epstein was tied directly to the Mossad. Epstein was a longtime friend of former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak, who has long-standing and deep ties to Israel's intelligence community. Their decades-long friendship has been the source of recent political attacks targeting Barak, who is running in the Israeli elections against current Prime Minister Netanyahu later this year. Barak is also close to Epstein's chief patron and megagroup member, Leslie Wexner, whose Wexner Foundation gave Barak $2 million in 2004 for a still-unspecified research program. According to Barak, he was first introduced to Epstein by former Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres, who eulogized Robert Maxwell at his funeral and had decades-long ties with the Bronfman family going back to the early 50s. Peres was also a frequent participant in programs funded by Leslie Wexner in Israel, worked closely with the Mossad for decades. In 2015, a few years after Epstein's release from prison, following his conviction for soliciting sex from a minor in 2008, Barak formed a company with Epstein with the chief purpose of investing in an Israeli startup then known as Reporti. That company, now called Carbine, sells its signature software to 9/11 call centers and emergency service providers and is also available to consumers as an app that provides emergency service with access to caller's camera and location, also runs any caller's identity through any linked government database. It has specifically been marketed by the company itself and the Israeli press as a solution to mass shootings in the United States and is already being used by at least two U.S. counties. Israeli media reported that Epstein and Barak were among the company's largest investors. Barak poured millions into the company, and it was recently revealed by Haaretz that a significant amount of Barak's total investment in Carbine was funded by Epstein, making him a de facto partner in the company. Barak is now Carbine's chairman. The company's executive team are all former members of different branches of Israeli intelligence, including the elite military intelligence unit, Unit 8200, that is often likened to Israel's equivalent of the U.S. National Security Agency. Carbine's current CEO, Amir Elchaya, served in Unit 8200 and tapped former Unit 8200 commander Pinchas Boukris to serve as the company's director and on its board. In addition to Elchaya, another Carbine co-founder, Lito Leshem, who served in Unit 8200 and later worked for Israeli private spy company Black Cube, Leshem now works for a subsidiary of Eric Prince's company, Frontier Services Group, according to independent media outlet Narrative. The company also includes several tie-ins to the Trump administration, including Platnir, founder of the Trump ally Peter Thiel, an investor in Carbine. In addition, Carbine's board of advisors includes former Planeteer employees Trey Stevens, who was a member of the Trump transition team, as well as former Secretary of Homeland Security Michael Chertoff. Trump donor and New York real estate developer Elliot Tawil is also on Carbine's board alongside Ehud Barak and Pinchas Boukris. Narrative, which wrote the first expose of Carbine's after Epstein's arrest, noted that the Chinese government uses a smartphone app very similar to Carbine as part of its mass surveillance apparatus. Even though the original purpose of the app was for improved emergency reporting, according to Narrative, the Chinese Carbine equivalent monitors every aspect of a user's life, including personal conversations, power usage, and tracks a user's movement. Given the history of Robert Maxwell, the father of Epstein's longtime girlfriend and young girl procuring madam, Ghislaine Maxwell, in promoting the sale of Carbine's modified Promise software, which was also marketed as a tool to improve government efficacy, but was actually a tool of mass surveillance for the benefit of Israeli intelligence. The overlap between Carbine and Promise is troubling and warrants further investigation. It's also worth noting that Unit 8200 connected tech startups are being widely integrated into U.S. companies and have developed close ties to the U.S. military industrial complex, with Carbine being just one example of that trend. As Mint Press previously reported, Unit 8200-linked outfits like Team 8 have recently hired former National Security Agency Director Mike Rogers as senior advisor and gained prominent Silicon Valley figures, including former Google CEO Eric Schmidt, as key investors. Many American technology companies, from Intel to Google to Microsoft, have merged with several Unit 8200-connected startups in recent years, and have been moving many key jobs and operations to Israel with backing from key Republican donors like Paul Singer. Many of those same companies, particularly Google and Microsoft, are also major U.S. government contractors. Who was Epstein really working for? Even though Jeffrey Epstein appears to have had ties to the Mossad, this series has revealed that the networks to which Epstein was connected were not Mossad exclusive, as many of the individuals close to Epstein, Leslie Waxner, for instance, was part of a mob-connected class of oligarchs with deep ties to both the U.S. and Israel. As was discussed in part one of this series, the sharing of intelligence, that is, blackmail, between intelligence agencies with the same organized crime network connected to the mega group goes back decades, with Leslie Wexner of the mega group as Epstein's chief patron, as opposed to financier with direct ties to the Mossad, a similar relationship is more than likely in the case of sexual blackmail operation that Epstein ran. Given the intelligence agencies in both the U.S. and elsewhere often conduct covert operations for the benefit of oligarchs and large corporations, as opposed to national security interest, Epstein's ties to the mega group suggest that his group holds a unique status and influence in both the governments of the U.S. and of Israel, as well as in other countries that were not explored in this report. This is by virtue of their role as key political donors in both countries, as well as the fact that several of them own powerful companies or financial institutions in both countries. Indeed, many members of the mega group have deep ties to Israel's political class, including to Netanyahu, Ehud Barak, as well as to now deceased figures like Shimon Peres, and to members of the American political class. Now, ultimately, the picture painted by the evidence is not a direct tie to a single intelligence agency, but a web linking key members of the mega group, politicians, and officials in both the U.S. and Israel, and an organized crime network with deep business and intelligence ties in both nations. Now, though this series has so far focused on the ties of this network to main Republican Party affiliates, the next and final installment will reveal the ties developed between this web and the Clintons, as will be revealed despite the Clintons' willingness to embrace corrupt dealings during the span of their political careers. Their mostly friendly relationship with this network still saw them use power of sexual blackmail to obtain certain policy decisions that were favorable to their personal and financial interests, but not to the Clintons' political reputation or agendas. Now, the editor makes a note here. The original version of this article incorrectly stated that Rafi Eaton was interested in repurposing the American-made Promise software to restore his standing in Israel's intelligence community caused by the fallout from the Pollard affair. The Pollard affair occurred 3 years after Eaton had succeeded in repurposing the software, and Mint Press has removed that incorrect information from the article and regrets the error. This article also originally neglected to mention that Eaton, at the time of his collaboration with the Earl Bryan to repurpose the Promise software, was the director of the now defunct Israeli military intelligence agency, LICOM. At the time of those events, and that information has been added to the story. Seymour Hersh's book, The Samson Option, Israel's Nuclear Arsenal and American Foreign Policy, does not call Robert Maxwell an agent of the Mossad, as was stated originally in this report, but does allege clear links and cooperation between Maxwell and the Mossad. This report was updated to reflect this more accurate description. Well, I've read part three. I'm in the process of reading part one and part two, and I can't wait for part four. The connection with the Clinton Foundation. Now, you folks are starting to understand, while I keep reminding people, that who is trotting out the players? You know, these... When you look at their backgrounds, and I don't care if it's Comey, I don't care who it is. These are the sock puppets. These are the higher-ranking foot soldiers, but still on the lower rung of things. Think of them as being the soldiers for a mafia. Same thing. And isn't it interesting that we see Meyer Lansky? There was a movie done about him starting that lone gambling joint in the middle of the desert, and then somehow that he was just a spendthrift and he was ripping off his associates and money. Now, folks, what he did was set up a laundering facility for money. And this is basically what Las Vegas has become. Nothing but one gigantic laundromat. All the illicit funds, how do you track and trace this stuff? Well, you really don't. And do you really think the gambling commission is hot on the books and looking at all the exchanges of cash and where the money's coming from and where it's going? Of course they're not. These are very powerful people. And now you can start to understand the Promise software that was marketed to private corporations, but more importantly, to governments around the world with a built-in trapdoor. You've heard the term, knowledge is power. Well, so is knowledge of a potential blackmail. And how much fun is that? Where you get the party that you're blackmailing to do your bidding, and if they refuse, well, they're talked to. Kind of like what the mafia used to do with their, with their loan sharks. Yeah, they loan money, points are running, the juice is hot, it's flowing. Now, you miss any of those payments, they show up maybe the first time to remind you to pay your bill. The second time they show up, they don't show up to kill you. They'll show up to dismember you a little bit, bend a few limbs, break a few bones. And that leaves you the impression that the next time that they show up, well, it's not going to be necessarily uncomfortable or put me in a cast. It might put me in a casket 6 foot under. Folks, the deep state and the corruption that not only inside this country, how many times have you heard high-ranking military officials brag that they own Washington, D.C.? They own the United States of America. They're not wrong. And how many of these simpering ne'er-do-wells that probably couldn't get a manager's job at a car dealership become these politicians, the know-nothings? Well, they're coiffured and dressed nicely and given the political tips as to what to do and what not to do, but more importantly, hooked up with the right people to help their political careers. And by the way, before I forget, the honey trap that they love to use, Mike, let me ask you a question concerning AJ in good old Austin, Texas, with a Jewish hooker that's now his wife. His attorneys were the attorneys that represented the Bronfmans. How far is Alex Jones up to his neck? Because you know what? He's never, ever been critical of Israel, has he? And he made some very interesting friends. You didn't see me get Donald Trump on this program for 30 minutes, did you? No, that was cleared in advance. When we get back after this bottom of the hour break, I'm going to play you something that's going to blow your mind. You think we're not being successful with the information we're putting out because we don't get a shout back on a megaphone and people waving their hands going, "Yes, we hear you." They're out there and they're absorbing the information. Folks, this is the main reason why the internet is being so tightly controlled. They don't like you. You're hateful. They decide what is hateful. If it's political, you expose something, you're out of there. What a world. What a world we live in. Mike, did you find the last 5 minutes of Trump's? Okay. This is where he goes after the opposers of Israel. And Donald, I don't know what your son-in-law, Mr. Kushner, has told you. I don't know if he was over there bidding in your behalf or whatever the case may be. But Donald J., be careful. Be very, very careful. He is literally walking through a minefield blindfolded.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hey, Hi, folks. CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence and log on to ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Ancient Life Oil uses organic ingredients and is blended in coconut oil for some of the best benefits. Legal in 50 states and non-psychoactive. Log on to ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Hey, is that a new music app?
Yeah, check it out. Surfer Music Discovery. It links to thousands of online stations, but the twist is you see the song names and artists that are now playing live.
That's different. No guessing. Looks like a waterfall of music.
So many formats. Rock, oldies, country, R&B, jazz, and a whole lot more.
How's that spelled?
Surfer. S-U-R-F-R.
Is it expensive?
It's free. No need to sign up or sign in.
Get the Surfer Music app free from Google Play or the App Store.
As a listener of RBN, you're surely concerned about being informed and being ready for whatever may come. Please consider the following questionnaire as a soul-jarring wake-up call. If you answer no to more than two of these following questions, you probably aren't going to make it through any major disruption in our country. The questions were compiled by people that have been there. Are you really ready? Do you own your own firearm for the primary defense and protection of you and your loved ones? Have you ever been professionally trained to stand against life-threatening behavior? Have you ever practiced enough to fire 500 rounds during a 2 to 4 day time frame, day and night? Can you load, unload, fire, and clear a jam in total darkness? Have all the adults in your household been professionally trained? Are you, life and death, comfortable with your abilities with pistol, revolver, shotgun, and rifle? Are you aware that everything that you do to prepare for an emergency is a waste of time, money, and energy? If you haven't honed your abilities to their highest level to protect and keep what you have, do you have the repair parts that will most likely be needed for each of your firearm, and do you have the ability to install those parts? Could you completely clean every firearm you own? Are you aware that your body won't go where your mind hasn't been? In other words, without proper training, followed by regular practice, you probably will not win a gunfight. Well, how did you measure up? Take the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to start correcting your deficiencies by receiving your Commander Lifetime Membership with Front Sight Firearms Training Facility. A one-time donation to RBN for $500 will give you a Commander Lifetime Membership at Front Sight as a tremendously huge thank you bonus. See details on RBN's webpage to make it happen. The clock is ticking. You had better be ready before it happens.
I've got to take a little time to think things over. I better read between the lines. I need it when I'm older.
By the way, you have posted part 1, 2, and 3 of that series. You repost them in its chronological order. Okay, right on top, folks. Tune in to Fox News. What are we having? Political debate. Oh, what are the Democrats' chances? We're in August of 2019. This is not August of 2020. There is no impending run for anything. But yet, they're continuously doing this closed-loop political banter BS to keep from what? Telling you anything of any substance. Folks, this is why this network must survive. We're a clearinghouse for the information that good people are doing. They have to have outlets. And if you think the message we've been putting out doesn't go anywhere because you don't hear the shout back, let me play you something. It's self-explanatory.
Brett far up here with a shout out to the Handsome Truth and the GDL boys.
But do that. You missed it. You missed the first part of that, Mike. He says his name. Now, it bled through on my microphone in here, but I want the audience to hear it clearly.
Brett Favre here with a shout-out to the Handsome Truth and the GDL boys. You guys are patriots in my eyes. So keep waking them up, and don't let the small get you down. Keep fighting, too. And don't ever forget the USS Liberty and the men and women who died on that day. God bless and take care.
You don't think this information we put out circulates? It certainly does. And just because you don't have a list of the high-profile people that are in the know, that know a good bit or partially what's going on and who's pulling whose strings. Now, do you have that clip ready of Donald Trump? I watched this. I forget who the hell he had in the White House with him. Romanian Prime Minister? President of Romania. Okay. And he fielded questions, I think, for about 27 minutes during this conference. But the last question, I want you to hear Trump's answer. Please, Mike, go ahead and play that.
Subject. On Israel, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar yesterday said that the United States should rethink its policy of aid toward Israel after she and Congresswoman Tlaib were denied entry. Congresswoman Tlaib was later allowed to come in, but she decided not to. Should there be any change in U.S. aid to Israel?
No. And you should see the horrible things that Tlaib has said about Israel. And AOC plus three, that's what I call it. AOC, just take AOC plus three. And you should see the things that the four of them have said about Israel over the last couple of years. I mean, Omar is a disaster for Jewish people. I can't imagine if she has any Jewish people in her district that they could possibly vote for. But what Omar has said, what Tlaib has said, and then yesterday I noticed for the first time, Tlaib with the tears, all of a sudden, she starts with tears. And I don't buy it. I don't buy it for a second, because I've seen her in a very vicious mood at campaign rallies, my campaign rallies, before she was a congresswoman. I said, who is that? And I saw a woman that was violent and vicious and out of control. And all of a sudden, I see this person who's crying because she can't see a grandmother. She could see a grandmother. They gave her permission to see a grandmother, but she grandstanded and she didn't want to do it. So that's a decision of Israel. That's not a lot of people are saying that was my decision. That's a decision of Israel. They can let them in if they want, but I don't think they want to. When you read the things that they've said about Israel, how bad, and if you look at their itinerary before they found out, you take a look at their itinerary, that was all going to be a propaganda tour against Israel. So I don't blame Israel for doing what they did. I have nothing to do with it, but I don't blame them for doing what they did. I think it would have been very bad to let them in, including the four. I'm talking about all four, but these two that wanted to get in, Omar and Tlaib. And I think it would be a very bad thing for Israel, but Israel has to do what they want to do. But I would not cut off aid to Israel. And I can't even believe that we're having this conversation. 5 years ago, the concept of even talking about this, even 3 years ago, of cutting off aid to Israel because of two people that hate Israel and hate Jewish people, I can't believe we're even having this conversation. Where has the Democratic Party gone? Where have they gone where they're defending these two people over the state of Israel? And I think any Jewish people that vote for a Democrat, I think it shows either a total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty. All right? Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you, Brad. Well,
you know what you're seeing less of, don't you? His son-in-law. He has kept himself out of camera view. Now, my gut instinct on this one, and I know some of you out there is not going to like this, But I'm relying on almost 30 years of looking at this screwed up planet and who's pulling whose strings. Who's dancing to Geppetto that made Pinocchio. The banks were always the powerhouse behind the global order of things. They call it the New World Order. Give it a name. And then you have subsets and subgroups that are making money off of illicit money that's protected. But the one thing that I drew, and the reason why I wanted to go through this thing word for word, ladies and gentlemen, is to demonstrate what Israel did to most of the industrialized world, to private corporations. Knowledge is power, folks. Yeah, have wads of cash in a bank account with a lot of zeros is great. And all the eye candy that will draw to that flame, like moths to a flame. Your hypercars and your supermodels and all of that. It's the people offering these sorts of things. Jeffrey Epstein, his little island. The FBI was down there, and New York Police Department detectives were down there to scrub that island of evidence. End of story. And I think Donald Trump is very good at sidestepping landmines. He was initially. Remember what dear Uncle Joe said. Keep your friends close, but keep your enemies closer. If I were to do anything about Israel, I would do it in my second term. If they had compromising anything on Donald Trump, it would have already surfaced. What you saw, this Mueller investigation, Mr. Comey, the politicized ones, the heads of the CIA that, geez, were magically just communists back in the 70s. This whole rat's nest. It is quietly being whispered that the CIA is being dismantled. Where does this come from? Q. Let me ask you a question about this Q group, folks. These little, to give it some sort of mysterious credibility that they speak in almost a double speak. Not clearly, not plainly. I got to get a journalist from Chile to break down, out of a four-part series, real journalism. They're not naming anybody. They keep dropping little hints that somehow things are coming. And if they are who they're supposed to be, folks, incriminating evidence and information to turn this apple cart upside down could be done in a pretty quick fashion. You know, the old kill switch. Spread that information far and wide. Now, supposedly the Q group is a merry band of real patriotic Americans. Okay? Give me something. Give me something. Instead of rumor and innuendo. Mike, when did Q come out and say that there were going to be mass arrest? How many months ago was that? About a year ago? I'm sorry, do I have callers? Ken in Fort Worth. Ken, I have my caller screen covered up with my email. Sorry.
Hey, John.
Yes.
Which funeral home is going to show Epstein? And who's going to get his money? You got any idea?
I have I have...
Sister, son, daughter, what? Who? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he just filed a, you know, what you call it?
Ken, you got to speak in more complete sentences. I'm sorry.
I know.
Say again.
I know. They said he just shipped a $100,000 cement mixer down to that island. How are they going to start a business? You know.
Hmm. I don't know, Ken. I do not know.
I have no idea. When are we going to get to see the body in the funeral home? Which one is going to be?
Ken, you're asking me a rhetorical question, or it should be, because I don't have the answer for that.
Well, somebody does, right?
Well, okay, get on the phone and call them, and then call me when you find out.
I'm hearing so many stories, I don't know what's going on.
Well, I just in this past hour and a half, I think I gave the listeners enough meat on the bone that there's much more to Mr. Epstein. Now watch what's going to happen with Mr. Barr at the Justice Department. Watch how this thing is going to be sidelined. They're there to protect their assets, and they don't give a damn who they have to kill to keep it that way.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going.
Okay, thanks, Ken. I just got some troubling information sent to me by email. The girl that was staying with us, dead due to drugs. Amazing. Simply amazing. At any rate, the Rothschild family is slowly but surely having their central banks established in every country of the world, giving them incredible amount of wealth and power. And folks, you know what they can buy. In the year of 2000, there were seven countries. Note, I said seven countries without a Rothschild-owned or controlled central bank. These are the interest people, folks. What were the seven countries in 2000? Afghanistan, Iraq, Sudan, Libya, Cuba, North Korea, and Iran. I can lay you dollars to donuts. Next week, if the Cuban government come out and said, hey, we're opening up a branch here of Chase in Cuba, you can better believe that those sanctions will be lifted after all of these years, and people could legally buy Cuban cigars once again. The fat cats got them. They live a different life, folks. They play by different rules. You're not even allowed to have a lousy Cuban cigar. It's not a coincidence that these countries, which are listed, were and are still being under attack by the Western media, since one of the main reasons these countries have been under attack in the first place is because they do not have a Rothschild-owned central bank yet. The first step in having a central bank established in a country is to get them to accept outrageous loans, which puts the country in debt of the central bank and under the control of the Rothschilds. If the country does not accept the loan, the leader of this particular country will be assassinated and a Rothschild-aligned leader will be put in that position. And if the assassination does not work, the country will be invaded and have a central bank established with force, all under the name of terrorism. Central banks are illegally created private banks that are owned by the Rothschild banking family. The family has been around for more than 230 years and has slithered its way into each country on this planet, threatened every world leader and their governments and cabinets with physical and economic death and destruction, and then placed by their own people in these central banks to control and manage each country's pocketbook. Worse, the Rothschilds also control the machinations of each government at the macro level, not concerning themselves with daily vicissitudes of our individual personal lives, except when we get too far out of line, like yours truly, being debanked by Chase. Complete list of banks owned or controlled by the Rothschild family. Ladies and gentlemen, it would take me an hour to read them all. Virtually unknown to the general public is the fact that the U.S. Federal Reserve is a privately owned company. Most Americans don't know it. Sitting on its very own patch of land, immune to U.S. law, this privately owned company, controlled by the Rothschilds, Rockefellers, and the Morgans, prints the money for the U.S. government, which pays them interest for the favor. This means that if we could reset the nation's debt today and would begin reprinting money, we would be in debt to the Fed from the very first dollar loaned to our government. Now, almost most people living in the USA have no clue that the Internal Revenue Service is a foreign agency. And as I've said before, this was the surety that all banks like to have, folks. You know, you gotta show them that you have a need, and you've got the will to borrow, but then you've got to meet the terms of the agreement. And those terms, folks, is interest. And nobody has given a plausible explanation all of these years as to why we are dealing with a private corporation that runs and controls our economy, our very government. When the real aim of the Rothschilds and their backers is to enmesh everybody in debt, to keep that juice running on the outstanding balance. Why do we need it? We didn't have it prior to 1913. Why do we still have it 100 years plus later? That's because the powers that be want it that way. And folks, you know, it's almost laughable how this government operates. No budget cuts, no nothing. Just keep borrowing more and more and more and more. What's the expenditures for the Pentagon? $760 billion within a year or two? It's going to be $1 trillion. For what? Who are they keeping safe? Not us. Instead of withdrawing our troops, shutting down our bases around the world, bringing these men and women home, and stop messing in the affairs of other countries for the benefit of the corporations, including the banks. The United States could quietly step off that stage, exit left, create our own currency for the time being at zero interest, just like John F. Kennedy did. And you saw what the international gangster banksters did to that man. Well, they did that for a reason, because they wanted to keep the United States with the single entity, the Federal Reserve, the private corporation, in the seat of power in this country for many years to come. That's a simple explanation as to why they're there. But why do we keep borrowing money? Why do we do no cutbacks? Why have we not looked at the government budget and said, you know what? You know, we're all borrowing this money. You know, the juice is running on this money. So we got to borrow less money. Nobody's even suggested this. It's business as usual. Oh, when it comes time to figure out the budget, well, we just got to kick up the debt ceiling a little bit more. It'd be absolute chaos if we didn't have the money to operate the government. Well, you're the ones that got us into the chaos in the first damn place. Now you're going to bury us in debt that we can never get out of? For the benefit of whom? Not us. You and your cronies. You and your deep state players. You and your asshats. Enough. Enough. Man. What a nutso world. By the way, I'm sure if Iran's going to make a deal here, it better be pretty quick. Why? Because the Rothschilds want Iran's banks as well, gaining control of the central bank of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Be one of the main reasons that Iran is being targeted by Western and Israeli powers as tensions are building up for the unthinkable war with Iran. It's worth exploring Iran's banking system compared to the U.S., British, and Israeli counterparts. Some researchers are pointing out that Iran is only one of three countries left in the world whose central bank is not under Rothschild control. Before 9/11, there were reportedly seven, as I reported, Afghanistan, Iraq, Sudan, Libya, Cuba, North Korea, and Iran. By 2003, however, Afghanistan and Iraq were swallowed up by the Rothschild octopus. And by 2011, Sudan and Libya were also gone. In Libya, a Rothschild bank was established in Benghazi while the country was still at war. Islam forbids the charging of interest, a major problem for the Rothschild banking system. Until a few hundred years ago, charging interest was also forbidden in the Christian world and was even punishable by death. It was considered exploitation and enslavement. Since the Rothschilds took over the Bank of England around 1815, they have been expanding their banking control all over the countries of the world. Their method has been to get a country's corrupt politicians to accept massive loans, which they can never repay, and thus go into debt to the Rothschild banking powers. If the leader refuses to accept the loan, he is oftentimes either ousted or assassinated, and if that fails, invasions can follow, and the Rothschild usury-based bank is established. Take a look at Venezuela. Up until 6-8 months ago, it was still rumored that, well, we might put troops on the ground in Venezuela. Why? Venezuela, at one time, was one of the richest countries in the world. But guess who they got tied up with? That's right, the banks. And now they're broke. People are on the streets are hungry. Folks, paper currency is only a mark of exchange for your labor, for goods and services. That's all that it denotes. You charge somebody $100, somebody gives you $100. Whether it's a shekel, whether it's a dollar, I don't give a damn what it is. Why is it? Why does it have to be connected with interest? The answer to that is it doesn't. And if the world would have stayed on a standard of gold and silver-backed currency, guess what you couldn't have had? Massive incurred debt, including the United States. You see, that's what the world bankers wanted, and that's what they have gotten. And they've gotten us right over a barrel. Remember me saying how many months ago? How are they going to get to Trump? If they had any evidence on it, it would have already come out. Impeachment process would have already taken place, and possibly Trump would already be out of office. They're not sure of him. That's why they're scared of him. That'll do it for us today. By the way, next Monday, I'm going to have Harley Schlanger on. That reminds me, I've got to respond to his email to book him. But next Monday, I will have Harley Schlanger on. Hopefully, Steve Elkins can join us. If not, I'll just fly solo with our friend over in Germany. I want to thank you for being here today. And ladies and gentlemen, we are the conduit for the real stuff of the world. Please support this network. Do not let it slip away. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, hit the donate button. And on that page, it gives our address where you can send a letter. Donation, money order, check, FRNs wrapped in foil, we don't care. Folks, it is the 20th of the month, and there are $0, and I got bills to pay, otherwise we're shut off. Either help us survive, or just wave bye-bye. We'll see you tomorrow. Send it abroad. We must take America back. We need prayer in the schools and more things made in USA. It's the least we can do for the red, white, and blue. We must take America back. We must take America.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.